From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, a small town where two teenagers are out for a hike in the middle of the desert. Maria loves the arid climate and wants to stay in the desert for college. Her best friend Jake yearns for the ocean, even though he can't swim. When he was very young, Jake was told his father drowned, and since then his mother has kept him from the water. But Jake is drawn to it in ways that he can't explain. He also can't explain the strange blue markings on his skin that glow when they come in contact with water. It's a secret he keeps from everyone, even Maria, and it's not his only secret. Jake also hasn't told anyone, let alone himself, that he's gay. Jake Hyde is the central character in a new graphic novel for young adults published by DC Comics. The romantic drama about Aqualad coming to terms about his queer and superhero identity is called You Brought Me the Ocean, and it has already received critical acclaim for its beautiful imagery and its powerful message. The author is Rochester-based Alex Sanchez, who's known for his award-winning novel Rainbow Boys and for his work counseling and mentoring youth. And he's joining us this hour to discuss his remarkable graphic novel, the themes, and the broader issues affecting the LGBTQ community during this current moment. Alex, welcome back to Connections. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing great. It's great to be with you, Kevin.
Well, I got to say, Alex, producer Megan Mack and I talked this morning about You Brought Me the Ocean, and we were in total agreement. A riveting story, beautifully told and beautifully drawn, and we're going to talk about Julie's work, of course. But I just want to congratulate you on the work here, because it is...
Thanks so much.
When I think about creating a new superhero, it cannot be easy to come up with something that is compelling, a little different. I mean, there's a lot of superhero, a lot of origin stories. This has some elements of a lot of different things, but it also has brand new elements. And so why don't you take me through what you're aiming to do with this, what the hope for You Brought Me the Ocean is?
Gosh, that's a great question. So I guess for me, it operates on several levels. One is just to tell a good story. And I'm really grateful to, you know, be accompanied in that with this amazing artist, Julie Moreau. They're best known for Blue is the Warmest Color and just their beautiful, beautiful artwork. But to tell a good story, and part of telling a good story is having a message that resonates. And I think overall, yeah, for the story, the message is be true to who you are.
So help me understand a few things, and forgive me here, but
sure.
Just a little bit of background about the story, because, you know, I'm ripping through the story in this book, this graphic novel, sort of hoping as a reader, without knowing a lot of the backstory of Aqualad or maybe where this intention is going, I'm thinking, well, we're gonna see Jake actually blossom right into a superhero. He's gonna battle Black Manta. There's gonna be some stuff going on, and you leave us sort of hanging before we even get down that road. So, what have you set up for us here? And I guess what I want you to do is take me through what DC, how you got this relationship with DC, what's gonna happen, you know, ideally with this character, and if we're gonna see a blossoming future for Jake and Aqualad.
Sure, great question. So this graphic novel, it's part of a whole series of graphic novels. Some of them aim toward young adults. Some of them aim toward middle graders that DC is rolling out to reach to a broader audience, an audience that doesn't typically read DC comic books. And so the idea is to have superheroes dealing with real life issues that young people deal with. And so one of the issues that they wanted to deal with that, you know, so many young people as nowadays growing up is dealing with identity, and particularly in terms of sexual orientation, sexuality, and gender identity. And so they heard about me because my previous work, as you mentioned, with Rainbow Boys and other books. So I got an email from them out of the blue saying, we're doing this project, and would you be interested in joining us for it? And I was a little bit of like, wow, is this a joke? You know, is this real? Because, you know, DC, it's these worldwide known icons, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman. And they, in their stable of characters, they have Aqualad, who you know, like so many of these superheroes go through different versions. And in a previous version, he identified as gay, and that was part of his identity, but hadn't really developed, explored in depth what that story would be. And so they gave me the freedom to pick and choose different aspects of Aqualad's previous iterations, and then really focus on the emotional story of what would be the emotional story for this character who will become Aqualad in a future work. But for now, he is a 17-year-old boy, as you mentioned. He's growing up in New Mexico, as far away from the ocean as possible, where his mom has taken him. And he's struggling to sort out his sexuality, and he's got a crush on this openly gay swim team captain. And at the same time, he's trying to get into his dream college to study marine biology. And he has his overprotective mom who's scared of him getting anywhere near water. And his best friend Maria has a crush on him, and she doesn't know about his struggles with his sexuality, and she has her own life plan for them. So Jake has a lot going on, and in the meantime, he's slowly discovering his superpowers. So all that is to create this complex and hopefully compelling character that's not just another superhero. It's this much more emotional, in-depth origin story.
I have to say, having seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse recently, that this is on that level for me in terms of a new character in part of a familiar universe to most people who, I mean, most people got into comic books, sure, but also generally speaking, most people know Spider-Man, Aquaman, you know, some of that kind of lineup of heroes and characters. So you take the familiar, and then you add something new. I thought Into the Spider-Verse was brilliant, and this is right on that line for me. I mean, you're doing something that is new, sort of wrapped up in what is familiar, but it's also important. And Julie Moreau said, quote, "Lives of gay, queer, and trans people of color are particularly at stake right now. I sincerely hope that this book will bring light and strength to the daily life of whoever suffers due to discrimination or just feels different," end quote. How important does this moment for this publication feel to you, Alex?
Well, I just love being a part of it. I mean, it's been very exciting for me during the course of my lifetime. See the cultural shift that's gone on. And the reality is that, you know, bullying and homophobia, especially for young people, it still persists. It's still going on. And at the same time, there's been this enormous cultural shift where there's just so much more visibility and acceptance of queer people. And I think what's particularly important with a book like this for young people is that, you know, they can see representations of themselves, that, you know, here are other LGBTQ characters. And that can be so powerful in YA literature. We so often talk about, you know, books as mirrors and windows, and that books like this for queer young people, they're like, you know, I have a place in this world. I can be someone, especially with superheroes, which are, you know, for young people, they're like celebrities. And for non-queer people, what it does is it gives a window into the lives of queer young people, so that it you know, encourages empathy and understanding and compassion, that this is what it's about. It's not you know, just about sexuality. It's not just about gender. It's more profound like that. It's about being able to be who we are, you know, fully integrated human beings.
Well, you write a complex set of characters very well here. Obviously, you have Jake, kind of the hero of the story, but also you have, as you mentioned, Kenny, the classmate he's got a crush on, who has, you know, his own challenges with his dad. You've got Maria, who is, you know, sort of missing somehow. Somehow Maria doesn't know that Jake is gay. Come on, Maria. But look, it's complex. That's a best friendship, and it's also developing into later teenage years, and she has interests. And you write these characters really well. And Alex, I think of myself now as sort of a formerly young person. I tell my son recently, you know, I was young once. I had a general idea of what it might have felt like to be young. But the older I get, the more I think, am I really relating pretty well? How do you find yourself making sure you relate to teenagers now, given what a trans kid, a gay kid, what they may be going through now, you can relate to in your own experience, but it might be a sort of a different kind of time, I guess, or is it? How do you feel about that, Alex?
Well, what happens is, you know, when my voice is definitely with young people. When I try to write, a quote-unquote adult story about issues that adults are living with, they just don't resonate as much for me. So for whatever reason, you know, my voice is with young people, and I think the reason for that is because, like for so many people, whether, you know, they're queer or not, adolescence can be a tough time. You know, we can be struggling with all sorts of, you know, whether it's sexuality or family issues, you know, identity, and on all sorts of different levels. And so for me, you know, a lot of those feelings of being scared and confused when I was a teenager, those get frozen up inside. And now through my writing, my inner teen is like, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about, you know, what it was like. And I think in terms of the way the world has changed, that, you know, the furniture has changed, but our experience is still very much that, you know, whether we were young people, you know, several years ago, or young people now, we're still dealing with the same sort of adolescent developmental issues. So I try to go back and remember what it was like. And then, yes, you know, ground truth, you know, having readers, you know, readers, young readers today who can read my work, when it's in draft form, and they can let me know, yes, this rings true, that doesn't ring true, we wouldn't say that, we wouldn't talk that way. So I always try to you know, share my work with some teens as I'm writing it, just to make sure I'm getting that part of it
sure.
Right.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so Jake is. He's scared in some ways. I mean, there's a lot that he's hiding. He's hiding the fact that he has applied to a college without telling his best friend because he's scared that he won't get in. He has, obviously, he's grappling with this strange superpower, which we'll talk more about in our second half hour, which I think is so cool that Alex gets to create a new superhero. It's really cool stuff. But he's also obviously dealing with his sexuality, and he's scared of hurting his best friend, Maria, who has a crush on him. He's scared of what it means to be gay, what his mom might think, whether there are possible partners in a rural or small desert town. He sees what the openly out gay friend Kenny goes through. That's got to be hard. What scared you the most, Alex, in your own life with the idea of coming out?
Well, you know, part of what is powerful for a book like this is the sort of metaphor for being queer is that, you know, As LGBTQ young people, we're faced with this real supervillain of homophobia and transphobia. And so for young people growing up, that might be expressed, through their parents' judgmental views, through people at school, whether it's friends or teachers or adults who may have judgmental views. It may be at church. So for me, it was, at the time I was growing up, it was a combination of those, being afraid of how my parents might respond. You know, when I was growing up, there was a time at which, you know, homosexuality was barely even mentioned. You know, the word gay was barely even used. So not having those role models, not having those images. Nowadays for young people, it's very different because there are so many publicly out LGBTQ people, but those aren't the people in their lives. And so for young people, one of the fortunate things about living at the time we are now is I get a lot of email responses for young people. And it can be heartbreaking to hear how many young people today still are struggling with acceptance. And what I always tell young people is it may not be safe for you to come out yet, but the most important thing is for you to love and accept yourself for who you are. Be true to who you are, and you know it will. You know it will get better. You will be able to come out, but you know it can still be a challenge for young people today. So for me, it was scary in terms of would my family accept me at school. Kids were, you know, regularly called anti-gay things. kids were bullied. So it wasn't safe. So a lot of that fear and confusion, and sexually with certainly with religion, you know, was I doing something sinful? Was it wrong? Was I bad? You know, all those things to sort out. And that's how I think, you know, books like this can still, you know, even today, are so necessary and so vital, and, you know, can in some cases save lives. You know, I've heard from young people who, you know, unfortunately, you know, can still be suicidal because they're so confused about who they are and whether they can, you know, grow up and find love and be loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so in this book, I found myself thinking about Kenny and what Kenny, who was an openly gay, and I guess my read on the character is pretty confident in who he is. He is challenging his father to accept him, but he is more confident and sort of self-possessed right now with his own identity than Jake is, at least in his sexual identity. Is that fair, Alex?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
And so, so Kenny is out. He's gay. This is a small New Mexico town, and he takes a lot of junk from the bullies in school, and it's pretty consistent,
right.
And it can be violent, and it becomes very violent at one point. And so I guess I found myself thinking, well, it's 2020. Is this still – this is how ignorant I am, Alex. I'm going, well, boy, maybe this is more of an anachronism. Maybe this is kind of a callback to what when Alex was 17. But then I thought, you know, I'm really thinking in a much more cosmopolitan way. I'm thinking, well, in bigger cities would this still happen or whatever – and I do wonder if there is a difference, at least as you understand it, between growing up gay in this country right now in a rural area versus a more cosmopolitan place or more of a city.
I'd say it really varies. It's very uneven all throughout the country. And, you know, as I, you know, before the pandemic, you know, I'd love to go out and speak, you know, at schools and libraries. I've gone all over the country, and what I consistently hear is that it depends so much on the leadership, whether it's the leadership at the school or in the community or in the church or at the, you know, state level, at the city level, that leadership really sets the tone, and it can make all the difference in a school, you know, how safe students feel. And, you know, that's a point that I always make, that, you know, homophobia and transphobia hurt everybody. And there are a lot more students who aren't queer than who are, because it's still, you know, such an effective form of bullying to call someone, you know, anti-gay epithets and to bully them for who they are, you know, as a sexual being or in terms of their gender or how they present themselves, how they express themselves. And so it creates this very narrow boxes for how young people can express themselves. So when the leadership takes a stand and says, you know, all young people in our school are going to be safe from bullying, then that sets the tone.
Is it more likely now, at least again from your experience, knowing that there's a range of experiences, but is it a lot more likely now that anti-gay bullying is going to be met with a vocal allyship, a vocal backlash, a strong rallying to the side of the LGBTQ plus community now than it was 10, 20, 30 years ago?
Absolutely, because I think that's part of the cultural shift that we've gone through, that even in schools where the leadership doesn't take a stand, there will be a teacher or a librarian or a minister who does take a stand. Or even a family member, you know, kids who they may not be accepted by their parents, but there'll be an uncle or a grandmother, someone who is in the supportive of them. And so in that sense, again, it's very uneven, but where there are those people out there, as compared to when I was growing up, that there weren't those people out there that I could, you know, go and talk to and feel safe and feel understood.
I guess I'm heartened by that. I'm heartened that allyship would mean not just not participating in discrimination or bullying, but actively calling it out and doing something about it. I mean, that's part of what happens in this book without giving too much away here. What do you think it would have meant to you to read a story like this when you were 17 or when you were 15 or when you were 13?
Oh, it would have been just so validating. It would have been that mirror that, oh my gosh, there's someone else out there like me, and just how powerful that can be. And, you know, I've experienced that, you know, as an immigrant from Mexico, I've experienced that both as, you know, a Latino person and as a gay person, just how when Rainbow Boys came out, where I heard from so many Latinx young people that it was the story was powerful for them, not just because of the gay themes, but because there was, a Latino character in there. And in all my subsequent books, you know, always try to have Latinx characters in there. And, you know, again, that validation that comes from that. Being able to read stories about ourselves.
Yeah, my guest is the award-winning author Alex Sanchez, whose new book is called You Brought Me the Ocean, and it is an origin superhero story of Aqualad, and I truly think you will love it. I'm talking about young adults, but I'm talking about people. It is a phenomenal story, and we're going to dive into... Oh, boy, that's a kind of a silly metaphor. We're going to dive in. That was unintentional. In our second half hour with Alex, let me get a little feedback first. Rich in Rochester on the phone. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi. As I listen to this conversation, as a father of a young black gay man, I think, especially in the African American community, I think homophobia is horrible. And how does your guest speak to that, or does he find he has any effect in that community? Because I fear that more than anything else for my son.
Rich, you mind hanging there for a sec? I'd love to hear Alex's thoughts, and then I'll follow up with you. So hang there, Rich. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, well, again, that's why I think it's so powerful that, you know, young people are able to have allies, you know, in their lives. And so certainly for, you know, a dad like Rich, you know, for a young person, even though they may be experiencing, you know, such horrible homophobia and bullying in their school or in their outside lives, just to know that there is someone supportive in for them, that, you know, that can just give a young person so much hope.
Rich, do you find yourself trying to intervene at all and sort of guide your son or guide, you know, the voices and people around your son? How do you deal with that?
Well, first, my son isn't that young now. He's an adult now.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I find as a father, I challenge my community all the time. You know, the barbershop talks, because you know how big the barbershop is within the African American community. I would find myself purposely taking on the entire barbershop with these type of subjects to try to get through and tell them it's not acceptable. And so, especially talking to the young black men, the problem is deep within that generation. So my point is this is not, I don't see this disappearing in this younger generation, maybe at certain levels, but there is still a level of homophobia that is just totally unacceptable. What
works?
Go ahead.
What works, Rich? I mean, I don't mean that sort of glibly, but what starts to make a change from what you have observed?
I just think the constant conversation and just saying, mm-hmm. challenging people. And you have to choose who you can challenge, too, because there are certain people who will not hear it. They won't hear your conversation. I think also to your point of the support of your children, it girds them and gives them a level of strength and confidence. That is needed because it comes at them. So I think as a parent, as usual, I think the parent is number one in every child's life. And that influence, I've watched my son stand up to even relatives because he found it unacceptable. But I think that strength comes from me and my ex. And I think that's so important.
Well, good luck to you, Rich. I would venture to say it sounds like your son is fortunate to have the dad that he does. Happy belated Father's Day to you. Alex, you want to add to what you heard from Rich there?
No, I think he said it, very, very well, and you know how important it is to have those sources of strength and for allies to speak up. I think a lot of the huge cultural shift that has occurred in our society is not just because of LGBTQ people coming out, but because of the allies. You know, when I visit schools and so many gay straight alliances, it's like they're led by, you know, straight girls or, you know, other, you know, straight boys, you know, that, and certainly a lot of my success as a writer has been as a result of those ally readers as well as the LGBTQ readers.
Let me get Gregory in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, Evan and Alex, this is Greg Gerard. You both know me. I just wanted to jump in there and first of all say congratulations, Alex, on this achievement. I'm so excited about it, and my book is on order right now. But I wanted to comment on the conversation that I do. Evan, you were asking, is this still relevant in today's world? And I'm older than you are, and I still try to gauge that as well. But I have been in recent years mentoring a transgender woman of color student in a city school. And I also keep touch with my nieces and nephews, and I keep touch with McQuaid, which was my alma mater. And I definitely think there is still a need for these conversations. You know, I think in general, there is so much more acceptance of LGBTQ issues that that the prejudice against it goes a little bit underground. And I think that's the issue that we need to keep fighting against or picking away at. I think the best way to do that, you were asking Rich earlier, what, you know, how do you do that? And I agree exactly with what he said, and that's to have those conversations. Sometimes people roll their eyes at me when I bring up something is not okay. And those are certainly uncomfortable conversations. And I don't always remember to make the right choice when I get confronted with something that's homophobic or transphobic or any type of phobic out there. I think ultimately silence equals acceptance. So I'm a big proponent of speaking up and continuing to tell our story. So just wanted to share that. And congratulations, Alex.
Greg, it's always good to hear you. Thank you very much. Alex, you want to respond? Go ahead.
Yeah, just to sort of, speak to both, you know, what Greg and Rich earlier said, that, you know, it's been also, you know, for me, it struck me now with the Black Lives Matter protests and movement that are occurring and how many of those protests are speaking directly to the issue of, you know, Black trans lives matter, that this isn't, you know, as well as this being an issue about race, it's also an issue about trans people and queer issues, and how I think it's very heartening to see as a society how we're having these conversations and being honest and real and recognizing the different levels in which, you know, prejudice and bias occur still in our culture. So there's been a lot of movement, a lot of encouragement. At the same time, we need to, you know, constantly recognize that, you know, we're not in the dream yet. We still have a long ways to go to get there.
My guest is the award-winning author Alex Sanchez, who, together with Julie Moreau, have brought us You Brought Me the Ocean, the new book. It's a graphic novel, and it is graphic in all the best ways. We'll talk about that coming up, too. It is beautiful. The book is an origin story of a superhero. And as I mentioned to Alex earlier, it's hard to find origin stories these days that don't sound like they're well-trod paths. But this is got elements of the familiar and elements of the new, and it's just wonderfully done. So the book is You Brought Me the Ocean. And if you want to join the program as we talk about the themes in the book, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994, or you can send us an email, connections@wxxi.org. On the other side of our only break, we've got some emails to read for Alex. We're going to talk about more about the story of the book without giving too much away, and want to get Alex's take on the Supreme Court ruling from June 15th that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects gay and transgender workers from workplace discrimination. We'll talk about all that and more coming up. Coming up in our second hour, our guest is the author of Voting Rights Under Fire, The Continuing Struggle for People of Color. Dr. Donathan Brown's book takes a look at the history of voter suppression, voter identification laws, their intent, and more in his book. And today happens to be a primary, a special election day. So how are we doing as a country? How do we measure this? Who votes and who doesn't? Why? It's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And I want to read a comment from a listener named Patty in Rochester. As I do that, we'll also quote a piece from City Newspaper that is relevant here. And as I quote it, I just want to say to listeners, I'm going to read the quote as written because the quote is telling, is reporting what happened. When I quote it, if you think that I shouldn't read the word I'm about to read, even in a quote, I want you to let me know. I've learned the hard way at times that even when you're quoting certain words, you got to be very, very careful. But I am going to quote this directly. Patty in Rochester says, there's a local educator, Tim Maines, who was open to all conversations with kids about who being who they are. He's a gay man, and she wanted to thank Tim Maines for everything that he did for kids, and she says he ought to be really part of the conversation. So Tim Maines, of course, served Rochester government, ran for mayor, and a very prominent voice in our community for many, many years. And here's what City Newspaper wrote about Tim Maines. Quote, Tim Maines was still new to teaching in the early 1970s when he walked into his class in the Grease School District one day to find the word faggot written on the blackboard. That and a series of other events led him to come out of the closet to his students and peers at a time when, as he put it, gay and teacher didn't belong in the same sentence, end quote. That's the 1970s. Alex, are there professions today where it still doesn't feel like you can be gay and be in this profession and be out?
Well, up until this past Monday, you know, as you said, not yesterday, last week, I guess last week, Monday.
Yeah, the Supreme When
the Supreme Court ruling came out. And, you know, for years, the Congress has been trying to pass the what was called ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which would have, you know, made sexual orientation a protective class so that teachers could not be fired for being gay. Because up until, you know, a week ago Monday, teachers could still be fired simply because they were gay. And so part of what was so momentous about that ruling is, you know, when we think about people in the workplace, that I think at the time, at 25 or 27 states, a person could still be fired simply because they were gay or trans, LGBTQ, that they no longer can. The tremendous effect that's going to have on schools across the country, that now teachers, librarians, educators in general will be able to openly be who they are without being at risk of being fired. So part of what made that ruling so massive in its importance was the you know what how it'll impact educators who are you know the people that that young people spend you know 6, 7, 8 hours of their day with.
And I want to ask you a little bit more about that Supreme Court decision, Alex. Actually, a very specific component of that. The risk is I don't have the decision in front of me. Producer Megan Mack will confirm in a heartbeat, I'm sure. My memory from a week ago is it was a 6-3 decision, and I think Roberts and Gorsuch were the conservative-leaning judges who joined the traditionally progressive-leaning judges in that. And I say I only... I'm almost certain that's true, and we'll confirm in a second, just because I've been reading Supreme Court decisions a lot in preparation for our second hour today. But Gorsuch and Roberts, in their words for this decision, I want to ask you, Alex, how important it is to you, maybe personally, and also if you can try to speak for an LGBTQ plus community, knowing there's going to be a range of opinions. But this wasn't a case where, well, the court was a 5-4 and it was 5 progressive judges going one way, 4 conservative judges go the other way. It was predictable. It's always based on the swing vote, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Instead, it was 4 traditionally progressive justices and 2 conservative justices, Roberts and Gorsuch. Gorsuch, a Trump appointee, ruling with what became then the majority. How much does that matter, Alex?
Well, I think it's a great sign of, you know, when reason can triumph. My understanding in the ruling was that Gorsuch basically said, wait a minute, you have 2 people at work who are attracted to, you know, men, but because one is a woman, that's okay, but because another is a man, that's not okay. That's clearly sex discrimination. And so just the simplicity of that argument just resonated so much for me that, yeah, of course, this is so simple. Anyone can recognize that. You know, so I was tremendously excited. And at the same time, you know, I felt like, can't believe this has taken us so long to get to this point. So I was very, very heartened and excited, you know, whenever I see that, yes, reason triumphs, that regardless of, you know, what anyone's personal bias may be, that, yes, reason triumphs.
And NPR had just reported 3 days earlier that the Trump administration on June 12th had finalized a rule that would remove non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people when it comes to health care and health insurance. So it'll be interesting to see going forward the impact of this June 15th Supreme Court decision. How much, though, do you still feel, Alex, there's a risk to either celebrating too early or feeling like the protections needed for this community will be there?
Well, I think this is going to have tremendous ramifications all over, that if this is the case in employment, then why would it not be the same in terms of, you know, hospital, medical care, whatever, you know. It's one more, you know, taking away that right to discriminate that people feel in terms of, you know, my work directly. Now that teachers and educators, they can be openly out and true to who they are, then, you know, they can have, you know, books like mine in their libraries without fear of repercussion. You know, a lot of my work has, you know, had this secondary aspect of community building. You know, how books can serve to build community, how books can serve to, you know, open hearts and minds. And I hear, you know, from so many school teachers that, you know, they may not be able to have the books in the school library, but they can have them in their personal room library, in their schoolroom library, especially English teachers, and that they will no longer have to fear those, you know, reprisals because of their sexuality.
Via email, David writes, I'm a writer, but decided to take the safe route and work as an English teacher instead of dedicating my life to writing as you did. I'm also white, male, hetero, middle class, that is, in the majority. I appreciate your courage in both coming out in the era that you did and choosing to make a living as a writer. Which was an easier decision for you?
Well, they sort of went hand in hand. That you know, part of my coming out process was you know, putting my stories on paper, and then you know, first having the courage to do that, which can be scary enough to, you know, hold that mirror up and say, yeah, this is who I am, and then having the courage to share those with people, and then having the courage to have those stories go out in the public. And so it was only through that courage that I was able to, you know, achieve some success as a writer. And certainly one of the rewards of being a young adult writer is to, you know, get invited to speak at schools and conferences. And so that always helps, you know, supplement with the writing. And so it's all been part and parcel of the same process.
Alex Sanchez is my guest. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the book. You Brought Me the Ocean, the graphic novel that tells the story of a 17-year-old discovering himself and his superpowers. So as far as I know, there is no small town in New Mexico actually called Truth or Consequences. Is that correct?
There is. There actually is.
Get out of here.
There actually is. And that's one of those things that, you know, from one previous version of Aqualad, he lived in Silver City, New Mexico. And I like the aspect of him being, you know, as far away from the ocean as possible. And at the same time, having traveled through New Mexico, there is this cute, wonderful little town called Truth or Consequences. And I thought, well, that would resonate a lot more with the story and its themes about honesty and being true to who you are and being truthful. And so that's where I chose to set it for this version.
Oh, that was easy for you. Just grab that one. It's a real town. Doesn't feel heavy-handed when it's real. So it's a real town. And Jake's last name, of course, Hyde, Hyde. Significant there?
Absolutely.
I mean, writing teachers would probably nudge their students there. But so that one seemed pretty clear to me, pretty obvious to me. He has a lot to hide.
Right.
This 17-year-old has a relationship with his mother in which, you know, he admires her. She works very hard for him, cares very much for him, always worries about him. He jokes early in the book that she's going to injure him with helicopter arms. And she says, look, you know, your father drowned, and I don't want you in water. Turns out, though, that's not what happened to his father. I don't want to give too much away here, but I thought that this was really cleverly done. How much did you work on this part of the plot, his relationship or his understanding of his father?
Well, you know, I was able to pick and choose different aspects of previous stories. So the fact that, you know, his father is, you know, who he is well known in the DC universe. It won't be any surprise to anyone who knows the Aqualad character from either, you know, TV show or a comic book. So that's all done. Part of what was so exciting about writing the book was this was my first graphic novel. And so I was able to learn so much about, you know, how to write a graphic novel, but also that I never realized it was such a collaborative form. And usually, you know, when I write a manuscript, I read the whole manuscript, turn it into the editor. The editor gives me notes and I go back to work on it on my own. Whereas a graphic novel or comic book is written so much in conjunction with the editor, just constant feedback on the story and actually developing the story, in this case, from a 12-page synopsis, developing it together with constant feedback from the DC editor. And then the other huge aspect is usually when I write a book, I have, you know, a vague idea of what the characters will look like. But then to actually watch an artist bring those characters to life was, you know, on the one hand, it was like, huh, well, that's not exactly what I thought they would look like. But then it's like, yeah, I really like that. And especially with an artist like Jewel Moreau, who just put so much emotion and expression into the characters' faces and who makes the characters so dynamic. You know, as I was writing this, I was just reading so many comic books and graphic novels and seeing, you know, what compelled me in certain of them. And one of the things I noticed is how many panels in traditional comics, they're just, you know, talking heads, two people talking. And when I got really excited was when they were doing something. And so as I was writing this, was constantly seeing, you know, what could the characters be doing? And then Jewel gave expression to that with her wonderful drawings. So, you know, one of the things I've learned is, you know, with a book like this, how we read it on two levels. One is the text level, you know, primarily through captions and dialogue, and the other is on the visual levels. And so part of my work as the author is to see how can I give the artist enough to work with so that someone who's reading it will really pause on each panel to say, oh, they're not just talking, what are they doing here? And how much more stimulating that is to visually.
It had to be so much fun to see that come together because Julie's work is seriously, seriously impressive and evocative of a wide range of emotions. Let's start with the cover here. I mean, Alex, we had a lovely conversation with Leslie Youngblood, a local author whose book Love Like Sky we certainly recommend. And she talked about, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, this community knows each other well. And so we talked on this program about the fact that, you know, she had to push a little bit to say, I want a black girl prominently featured on the cover of this book. And I don't care what that means when it goes in Pittsford, Barnes & Noble, or different bookshops where traditionally certain images might make it more challenging to sell. She fought for that. She cared about it. And she thinks it's important. And I agree with her. I thought it was a great choice. It was a great cover. Your cover is great. And, you know, I don't know if it was you and Julie who decided or others, but you have you've got Jake and Kenny on the cover in an embrace, you know, touching hands. And, of course, Jake's markings on his forearms are starting to light up. Part of his superpower, but they're also moving into what looks like it could be a kiss. And I want you to take me through that cover, which I do think is probably in the category just basically looking at publishing as courageous. I think it's gorgeous.
Well, thank you. I would agree with you. And all the credit for that cover really goes to Jules Moreau, the artist. That was hers to come up with. Theirs to come up with. And they did just a phenomenal job on that. And, you know, in terms of, you know, what you said about Leslie's wonderful book, that DC, part of what's been wonderful about working with them is that they are so big now on diversity and inclusion. So all along the way, they were just so supportive of that. And, you know, certainly in terms of the cover and the characters, and in terms of the sexuality of the characters, you know, as my wonderful editor, Sarah Miller, who was like, I want lots of smooching in this book, you know, and she kept pushing for, you know, more scenes of, you know, intimacy between the boys, you know, getting closer and closer. And so that was just so empowering for me to have that encouragement to come up with those scenes, and then for Jules to depict those images on the page, which, again, for LGBTQ young people, those images are going to be so powerful. It's not just the words. It's actually seeing those drawings.
Well, I hope Julie Moreau hears us talking about this, because when I say you can feel the heat in those scenes, which is, you know, it's important. Those were powerful and important moments in this story. And Alex, you know, we came through an era in the 90s into the aughts where it's like, well, can we have gay characters in sitcoms? Okay, but, you know, should it be that being gay is the joke, or it's more of a character where, you know, they're not sort of a mainstream component? Okay, then can we just have mainstream, you know, gay characters? Then can they kiss on screen? Can we do that? I mean, we've gone through all of these permutations
exactly.
In media, it seems like, but it's more permanent when it's on the page, and there's real heat coming off the page there. I imagine you're proud of that.
I am. I mean, my goal was to try to capture, you know, both that tentative awkwardness of being, you know, a young person and, you know, can I do this? Should I do this? Are they like me? What do they think of me? You know, all that tentativeness, and at the same time, that excitement and passion that you know, we can feel as when we're growing up, of, you know, the first time that we are having that, those romantic feelings and that romantic intimacy and touch with someone that we're interested in, you know, even if it's just, you know, holding hands.
Well, the book is called You Brought Me the Ocean. And before we lose Alex Sanchez, let me just ask you, what is the timeline next here? What do you know about the future of this character and what your role is going to be?
Well, given how the positive response to this book, I'm certainly hoping, we don't have a contract yet, but I'm certainly hoping that there will be a sequel to answer all those questions that you're left hanging with, and perhaps even a series. So I'm hopeful, and that's where I am with it. In the meantime, I'll have a middle grade novel that will be coming out in February, so I'm busy with other stuff in the meantime.
Well, you got 90 seconds, so tell me about what's coming out in February.
So this is actually, it's a middle grade novel, and it's about twin boys whose dad comes out as transgender, and their different reactions to that. And hopefully it'll also, you know, strike a chord for young readers and, you know, continue this process of empowerment for young people and whether they're queer or not, to, you know, continue to be, you know, more open and accepting, and continue to be part of this wonderful, tremendous cultural shift that we're going through.
How much control do you think DC will give you of plot directions in future? I mean, is it really going to be in your hands?
It'll be in conjunction. You know, this is what I love about this, is that collaborative aspect, because what happens is that then, you know, they'll have ideas that I bounce off of, and then I'll have ideas that they bounce off of. So I'm not concerned about how much will be in my hands, because it's been such a wonderful collaboration, such a wonderful synergy that I'm excited about, you know, how we can continue to collaborate.
Alex Sanchez, the author of You Brought Me the Ocean, illustrated by Julie Moreau. The book is available now, and I hope our listeners enjoy it as much as we did. Alex, thank you once again. Congratulations on this. We always appreciate the perspective and the conversation with you. We have a phenomenal constellation of authors in this town. And thanks for making the time. Let's talk soon.
Thank you so much, Evan.
Alex Sanchez, You Brought Me the Ocean, out now. More connections coming up.